So after wishing everyone a Chodesh Tov, we're going to take a look at the Gemara here on Daf Yud Dalet. Okay then?
Okay.
Now you may recall that here on Daf Yud Dalet, we had mentioned in the Braisa that there's a whole episode that's related by the Gemara about Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, one of the Asar Ruge Malchus, said he was put to death for giving smicha. And in the quote from the Braisa that tells this story, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava gives amongst a whole list of chachamim, five chachamim, that he gives smicha to. One of them is Rabbi Meir. So clearly the implication is that Rabbi Meir is a Talmud of Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, and he gets his smicha from Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. So the Gemara says that in fact that's not true, because Rabbi Meir got smicha from his Rebbe, that was Rabbi Akiva, not from Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. So we have a bit of a contradiction here to try to figure out who gave smicha to Rabbi Meir. So we're now on Daf Yud Dalet Amud Beis, Yud Dalet Amud Aleph, and we're going to start from the words for Rabbi Meir. Now let's see if I could show you where that is. Do you see a Tosis Diva Maska Rabbi Shimon? Which would be what? The fourth Tosis on the page? 1, 2, 3, 4.
Starts with Mishum, the line.
So the line starts with the word Mishum and concludes with Rabbi Meir. That's where we're up to. And we'll see if we can just.
Is this as closed as it gets? Or? Okay.
Yeah, the acoustics here is... All right, for Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, Samche, he got smicha for Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, rhetorical question, va'omar, Rabba bar Bachanam, Rabbi Yochanan, kola omer, anyone who says, Rabbi Meir lo smacho, Rabbi Akiva, eino elatoa. If somebody would make a claim that Rabbi Meir did not get smicha from his Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva, he's mistaken. So it turns out that Rabbi Meir was given smicha by Rabbi Akiva, not by Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. So we have a contradiction. It's very interesting, by the way, that the Gemara only objects to Rabbi Meir. Now, if you take a look again at the list here on the top of Daf Yud Dalet of the five Zakenim that Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava gave smicha to, then you'll find others on the list that were also talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. For example, Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda's on this list, and Rabbi Shimon's on this list. Both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon were talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. Presumably they got smicha from Rabbi Akiva. So it could be that although Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, in fact, were talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, they never received official formal smicha from Rabbi Akiva. But Rabbi Meir, we know, and that's the statement here of Rabbi Yochanan, received a formal smicha from Rabbi Akiva. So how can we say that Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava was the masmich? He was the one who gave Rabbi Meir smicha. So the Gemara says you can get smicha twice. Now, why would a person get smicha twice? So let's read the Gemara. The Gemara says, Samche Rabbi Akiva. It's true, as Rabbi Yochanan had formulated it, that Rabbi Akiva conferred smicha on Rabbi Meir, but v'lo kiblu. Let's see what those words v'lo kiblu mean, but first we'll read another few words. Samche Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava v'kiblu. Now this Gemara seems to be operating with a premise, which is very new, at least to me it's very new, and that is that the people... Is anyone here familiar in American law? There's something called the system of checks and balances. Does that phrase mean anything to you? Well, anyway, what that means in halachic terms is that the tzibur, when something is relevant to the community at large, so the rabbanu want to enact a certain enactment, then they must get the approval of the tzibur. Again, it could be a tacit approval. It doesn't mean we're going to take a vote like we do here in a democratic election, but there has to be an assumption that the enactment of the Chachamim was well received, was well accepted. For example, the Gemara makes a distinction at the end of Avodah Zarah between Cholav Akum and Shemen Akum. So when the Rabbanan enacted that we're not allowed to buy oil from Goyim, that never went on. It just didn't It just didn't get accepted. But when they enacted that we shouldn't drink the milk of non-Jews, because they used to mix all sorts of different kinds of species, non-kosher milk, so that was well received. And now the Gemara is applying a similar kind of structure to smicha. Smicha means that this individual, who's the nismach, who is ordained, he has now rights to make decisions that are going to impact on the community at large. He becomes one of the final decisors of the halach of the law. The people, therefore, have a right to accept him or not accept him. This is the extreme democracy of the halach. You know, in secular law, once you appoint the judge, you know, we're not going to ask for the approval of the people. You know, they can get up and sign all the, what do they call them, the... petitions that they want. It's not going to help, you know, once the legal system has ordained someone, so to speak, for judge, you know, to be a judge, that's it, that's final. The Torah went even a step further. The Torah went with its democracy, you know, all power to the people. The people have the power to either accept the smicha or not. And apparently the people felt that Rabbi Meir was too young to get smicha. Now, exactly how old Rabbi Meir was at the moment that Rabbi Akiva conferred smicha on him, I do not know. I don't even know where to research that. There is a sefer called Seder HaDoros. Maybe he would mention the age of Rabbi Meir at that time. I think I once mentioned to you that there was a great giant about 2.5 centuries ago named Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz. Did you ever hear of him? So, we don't have to stand. So he was appointed as the Rav of his community at the age of 17. He was so precocious. He was such a genius, way beyond his years. So at the age of 17. So the story goes, I don't know if it's true, that the first lecture he gave, maybe on the first Shabbos he gave his drasha, he said, "I know I have one chisaron, one deficit my age, but I promise you I'll spend every moment of my life improving that deficit." Wow. You know, that was Rav Yonasan Eibeshitz. Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria was also 17 years old, right? But at least he grew a beard. You know what I'm saying? So apparently, Rabbi Akiva's smicha for Rabbi Meir was premature, at least in the eyes of the public. And therefore, when Rabbi Meir matured, he was a little bit older and more experienced and well known in the community. At that point, his reputation preceded him, and Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava conferred a second smicha on him. You know, back in the day, today it's already passé, it's not popular anymore, there used to be a custom to try to get smicha from as many rabbanim as you could. So I knew a Jew, Rabbi Yisrael Shurin Ovashom, he was from Efrat at the end of his life. He got smicha from so many different rabbis. It's like he had a whole, you know, it's like if you've ever seen in a doctor's office, you know, they you know, especially if it's alternative medicine, you know, the whole wall is covered with the diplomas. So in terms of Rabbi Meir, he had one smicha from Rabbi Akiva, and the Gemara says he had a second smicha from Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. Yes, can I get you a Gemara? Is there an extra Gemara Sanhedrin here by any chance? Let me just see what we have here. Okay, we got every Masech and Shas except for Sanhedrin.
I want to look for that.
All right. All right, we'll learn some Torah Shebaal Peh in the meantime. All right. You know, back in the day, before Rav Yehuda Hanasi, even Mishnayos were Baal Peh. And before Ravina Rav Ashi, the Gemaras were Baal Peh. So, Om Rav Yishu ben Levi, Ein Smicha b'chutz l'aretz. Now, I don't know what this means. Does this mean that if I'm in chutz l'aretz, and I already have smicha, I can't give smicha to someone else? Or does it mean that I cannot confer smicha on someone who is outside the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, even if I am in the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael? So first, the Gemara wants to know, my ain smicha. What does it mean you can't give smicha in chutz l'aretz? Elam, if we assume it means lo daini dini knasos. So you remember that we established that what's unique about smicha, if a person has smicha, he can not only judge monetary cases, but he can even judge penalties, monetary penalties, which is called knas. That's something that only a musmach who has an unbroken smicha back to Moshe Rabbeinu can adjudicate a knas. So if this be the case, that you're telling me that smicha is totally irrelevant in Chutz Laaretz, which would mean that there are no judges in Chutz Laaretz that could judge dine knasos, because knas requires smicha. If that be the case for Tanan, what do we do with the Mishnah? At the end of the first parak of Makos, the Mishnah establishes Shesanhedrin Oheges Bein Ba'aretz Bein B'Chutz Laaretz, that there was a period of time in which Sanhedrin, the Sanhedrin itself, the highest court of Israel, made up of 71 judges, would sit in Chutz Laaretz. You know, they went into Golos because they can no longer be in the Beis HaMikdash, which is where outside the Beis HaMikdash Lishkas HaGoz is. And that's exactly what went on over here. So you see that Sanhedrin has a power, has an effective status even in Chutz Laaretz. Now, one of the powers of Sanhedrin, for sure, it goes without saying, is to judge knossos, dine knossos. So what do you mean when you say that there's no such thing as dine knossos in Chutz Laaretz? Because there's no one has the status of a musmach in Chutz Laaretz. The entire Sanhedrin can be located in Chutz Laaretz.
So someone has, you can't get smicha in Chutz Laaretz.
Okay, so that's going to be the next Gemara. But right now the Gemara thinks that in Chutz Laaretz there's no such thing as smicha. Anyone who has smicha, his smicha is only valid within the bounds of Eretz Yisrael. Outside the bounds of Eretz Yisrael, it's invalid. He doesn't have the status as a musmach. If that be the case, how can you imagine knossos and Chutz Laaretz? We have situations in which the entire Sanhedrin was in Chutz Laaretz.
The fact is that the entire Sanhedrin was outside Chutz Laaretz, that therefore you could have smicha?
Well, again, I don't know if you could have smicha in Chutz Laaretz, but at least you have to grant me that you can have musmachim in Eretz Yisrael, and their status is valid even in Chutz Laaretz. So don't tell me that there's no such thing as dine knossos in Chutz Laaretz. There won't be maybe a process by which you could confer smicha in Chutz Laaretz, but once there's already a musmach, then he certainly has the power to be dan dine knossos in Chutz Laaretz. And in fact, historically, that's true because the Sanhedrin itself was in Chutz Laaretz. So right now, the Gemara is going to have to backtrack and whittle down the application of this principle of Rabbi Shuv ben Levi. Rabbi Shuv ben Levi could not have possibly meant that there's no such thing as smicha in Chutz Laaretz, that smicha is not valid in Chutz Laaretz, and the status of a musmach is not valid in Chutz Laaretz. That can't be. So we're going to now see that the Gemara is going to try to reinterpret Rabbi Shuv ben Levi. Ella says the Gemara, "Delo samchinan b'Chutz Laaretz." We cannot confer smicha outside of the bounds of Eretz Yisrael. But if somebody was already a musmach, he was granted smicha in Eretz Yisrael, then he has a full-fledged status of a musmach, even in Chutz Laaretz. He doesn't forfeit his status and his validity as a musmach when he goes to Chutz Laaretz. So when the Sanhedrin were gola to Chutz Laaretz, they were appointed as members of Sanhedrin in Eretz Yisrael. That's where they got their smicha. That status as a nisvach continues even when they're in Chutz Laaretz. Hence, they can judge dine knossos even in Chutz Laaretz. So I've also, at this point, I want to share with you a couple of different insights that are anthologized here in the Masifta. Number one, we said before, again, I'm just refreshing your memory, this was Thursday of last week, that when Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava conferred smicha, he didn't do it as a sole masmich. He had to do it together with two other individuals. Now, although the Braisa doesn't mention the two other individuals, the Gemara says that the reason why the Braisa omitted that information is because of Kvodo Shel Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. They weren't on the level of Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, so the names were omitted. But in fact, there were two other people who conferred smicha. Now, if that be the case, then is it possible that one of the other two people on that tribunal of Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, was Rabbi Akiva himself? The Gemara sets up a contradiction. You can't tell me that Rabbi Meir got smicha from Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, because I know that Rabbi Meir, in fact, got smicha from Rabbi Akiva. Maybe both are true. Perhaps Rabbi Akiva was a member of that tribunal, right? We know that there were two other people, the Gemara says it explicitly, we learned it on Thursday, who sat together with Yehuda ben Bava to give smicha. Maybe one of them was Rabbi Akiva. That would make sense.
You said he wasn't, they weren't at good level.
Excellent. So that's what the Achronim say. It couldn't have been that it was Rabbi Akiva whose name was left out. Rabbi Akiva actually was greater than Yehuda ben Bava. Rabbi Akiva was the greatest of his generation. So for the Gemara to say that the names were omitted because of the covenant of Yehuda ben Becerra, because Yehuda ben Becerra was greater than them, it cannot be that the name that was omitted was that of Rabbi Akiva. So that's point number one that I wanted to share with you. And that's interesting. The Gemara, by the way, in Brachos says to what extent was the status of Rabbi Akiva so great? The Gemara says in Brachos that Rabbi Akiva was Ma'aber Shanim in Chutzlaretz. Now, Iber Shanim, to add an extra month to the calendar, that requires Eretz Yisrael. But the Gemara establishes that there's one exception to that rule. Im lohiniach chacham kamoso be'Eretz Yisrael. If there's no one left in Eretz Yisrael who's as great as him, then he can be Ma'aber the Shanim in Chutzlaretz. And the Gemara applies it to only one individual in Jewish history, and that was Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was the only one about which you could say, Lo iniak moso vi eretz Yisrael, and that's why he was capable of legally being ma'abra the shanim in Chutzlaretz.
Wasn't he left Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Akiva?
Yeah, for a short period of time he was in Chutzlaretz, then he came back. But while he was in Chutzlaretz, one of the things that he accomplished was Iber Shana. And that's a sugya in two places. First of all, in Yevamos, and secondly, in Brachos. Now, here's another point that we want to make. We have a piyut called Arzei HaLavonim. Do you remember this? The Asaru Gimach, we recite on Tisha B'Av. And in that piyut, Rabbi Akiva's name is mentioned amongst the ten, and Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava's name is mentioned amongst the ten. You get the impression, when you read the Arzei HaLavonim, that all 10 of these martyrs were put to death at the same time. Do you remember how they went to Rabbi Shmuel after the Gezerah and they asked Rabbi Shmuel to go up to the heavens and figure out if the... It's not so. What the Paitan does is he tries to impact on our passions by putting them all together. But in fact, each one of the Asaru Gimalchus was killed separately, as we saw here. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, was killed as a result of the mice of smicha. Now, if that be the case, then it would seem that Rabbi Akiva actually was put to death before Yehuda ben Bava. How the historians know this, I'm not 100% sure, but that's written up in all the Svarim. And if that be the case, it's impossible that amongst the two other rabbis who were part of the tribunal of giving smicha of Yehuda ben Becerra, of Yehuda ben Bava, I keep making that mistake, I apologize, that Yehuda ben Bava, is Rabbi Akiva was one of them, because he was already put to death before Yehuda ben Bava. Okay. Now, we said that the Sanhedrin has the status of Sanhedrin even in Chutzlaretz. Now, one of the powers of Sanhedrin is to put a condemned capital criminal to death. So the Yad Ramah, who's the super commentary on Masechta Sanhedrin in the Rishonim, he says that Afilu Dini Nefashos, the power and the authority of Sanhedrin in Chutzlaretz extends even to a death penalty. Ubitznai, but only on one condition. That it's bizman shebeis hamigdash kayam. Now, the Gemara tells us in Makkos that 40 years before the destruction of the Migdash, the Sanhedrin was already gola. They were on the move. They couldn't remain in that place. The enemies were closing up on them. And that was for a period of 4 decades. So during that 4 decade period, the Beis HaMikdash still stood, and then the Sanhedrin and Chutzlaretz had a full power even to condemn a person and put him to death. Even in Chutzlaretz. But after the destruction of Beis HaMikdash, then the impact or the status of Sanhedrin was severely cut down and would only apply to Dinei Knossos, but they could not put a condemned person to death. Now, smicha means ish mi pi ish mi Moshe Rabbeinu, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu placed his spirit, his Shechina, on Moshe Rabbeinu, gave him smicha, and anyone who gets smicha now is getting a little bit of that Ruach HaKodesh, that Holy Spirit that HaKadosh Baruch Hu conferred on Moshe Rabbeinu. Again, he's not getting the full blast of it, but he... And Rashi tells us an amazing chiddush in Moed Katan. So for the religious Zionists, this is a great statement of Rashi. Rashi says that Roy Hoya Rabbeinu Shetishal of Shechina Elo Shebavel Garmalo. The Gemara says that there was no Shechina in Bavel. So Rashi says She'ena Shechina Shore Elo B'Eretz Yisrael V'lo B'Chutz La'aretz. Now again, if Moshe Rabbeinu received some of that Shechina when God conferred upon him Smicha, now he takes some of that Shechina and he transmits it to the next Mismach and so forth and so on, that process can only be implemented in Eretz Yisrael, but not in Chutz La'aretz, because the Shechina is only in Eretz Yisrael. Again, it doesn't mean that once you're conferred as a Mismach, that you can't be a Mismach and have Smicha in Chutz La'aretz. But to give Smicha in Chutz La'aretz, that's impossible. Right. That's a paradox, because it means that the original Shechina that conferred Smicha on Moshe Rabbeinu was in Chutz La'aretz, but yet that was only a very limited moment in time. But after henceforth, says Rashi, there's no Shechina in Chutz La'aretz. That's why, by the way, Yonah runs to Chutz La'aretz, right? Because he doesn't want to get the Nevuah. Nevuah is through the Shechina, and that's only in Eretz Yisrael. That's why Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, you know, he wrote all those piyutim, a fraction of which we recite on Tisha B'Av. Because Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi was so in love with Shechina, he wanted to get to Eretz Yisrael so badly, you know, to connect to Shechina. Gemara says now the following: Pshita somchim bechutz laretz vanismachim ba'aretz. For sure, this would not be valid if those who are conferring smicha are in chutz laretz. To amrinan to lo, we said that you cannot be somech in chutz laretz. So for sure, the active agent, who's the musmach, who's conferring smicha, certainly has to be in Eretz Yisrael in order to have the power and the authority to confer smicha. However, here's where I don't understand. What would be the law in the case of Ela somchim ba'aretz? Let's say if those who are conferring smicha are in Eretz Yisrael, and then ismachim are b'chutz laretz. So let's say you could give smicha on Skype, right? So the nismachim are in Chutz La'aretz. We'll have to notify the nismachim that the masmichim were conferred smicha on them. We'll send them a message, you know, in a bottle, you know, in a bird, and the bird is going to carry the message. They're going to open up this document to find out that they are called the Rebbe, that they have smicha. My, would that be valid? Or is it possible that we need that both the masmich for sure has to be in Eretz Yisrael, and even the nismach who's receiving smicha likewise has to be in Eretz Yisrael? And here the Yad Ramah quotes two opinions. Yesh Mefarshim, he says, according to one school of thought, this suffix applies only in a case where the nismach is far away from the masmich. Shasofik hu rak ba'ofen shanismachim b'chutz la'aretz, which means they're very, very far away. There's a great distance between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. And the Gemara has a tzad to say that since the somchim, who are conferring smicha, they're the active agent, that's the main primary cause, they are in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore the Gemara thinks that if the nismachim, even though they're far away, they can still receive smicha. Or do we say no, they have to be in Eretz Yisrael? Not, it's not enough that the somchim are in Eretz Yisrael, we need the nismachim to be in Eretz Yisrael. According to the Yesh Mefarshim, if both the masmich and the Nismach are both in Eretz Yisrael, that would be sufficient, even if there's a distance between them. But Yesh Mefarsh, the second school of thought, says that Be'inon Gabayhu, that we need that the Nismach, according to one side in the Gemara, be actually present in front of the Masmech. And therefore, Afilu Be'ofen Sheshneyam Be'Eretz Yisrael. So when the Gemara gives this example of Chutz La'aretz, that's just an example of a Nismach who's not in the presence of the Somech, because we must have that the Nis, according to one side in the Gemara, we must have the Nismach be present in front of the Masmech. And the Yad Ramah rejects this second pshat. You don't need for sure that the Nisfach has to be in the presence of the Masmech. That for sure is not a condition. Because otherwise, why did the Gemara have to mention Chutzah? The Gemara just sort of said, what if the Nisfach is in Eretz Yisrael? Aval shalo b'gavayu, lo b'funav. From the fact that the Gemara posits its suffix in the case of Chutz La'aretz, it must mean that it's an issue of Eretz Yisrael. And the question is, what do we need? Is Eretz Yisrael a condition in the Masmech? He has to be located, his feet are in Eretz Yisrael. Or is it even a condition in the Nismach, that the Nismach himself has to be in Eretz Yisrael? But there's no question in the Gemara's mind that you don't need that the Nismach be present in front of the Masmech. And this Yad Ramah would support the Yaivitz. I don't know if you remember about a week ago, no, less than a week ago. When did we start last week? On Wednesday? Yeah, last Wednesday, I think it was. We mentioned Rav Yaakov Emden. He says that the reason why there's a difference between smicha in parahelim dover shel tzibur as opposed to smichas chachomim. You remember that in smichas parahelim dover shel tzibur, the zakenim, three members of the Sanhedrin, or maybe even five, have to come and lean their hands on the Rosh HaPar. But not so in the case of smichas chachomim. And the reason for that is because the Yaivitz claims you would undermine the whole process of smicha, because many situations have it where the Nismach cannot possibly show up in the presence of the Masmech, and you would be virtually undermining and completely nullifying the whole enterprise of Smicha. And that's supported here by the conclusion of the Yad Ramah, that although you might need that the Nismach be in Eretz Yisrael, like the Masmech, but he doesn't have to be Befanav, he doesn't have to be Begavayu. So there is long distance Smicha, but it's possible that the condition requires that both the Masmech and the Nismach both be in Eretz Yisrael. So again, let's just summarize. The Gemara has a suffix now. When we say that there's no giving of smicha in Chutz La'aretz, the Gemara offers two interpretations. One thing is crystal clear, that's not a suffix. The Masmech for sure has to be in Eretz Yisrael, but does the Nisvach have to be in Eretz Yisrael? Could there be such long distance smicha that the smicha could travel from Eretz Yisrael all the way to Chutz La'aretz? And the Gemara vacillates about this point. And here the Yad Ramah has two schools of thought. One school of thought says that the Gemara is only worried about the fact that the Nismach is in Chutz La'aretz. Had he been in Eretz Yisrael, even if we'd be, you know, be as far as Beersheba to Tveria, you know, that would be fine. That was never an issue. But the second school of thought maintains that Chutz La'aretz is just symbolic, so to speak. It's representative of a long distance. But if that long distance would be in Eretz Yisrael, it would be the same. We need Isa Begavayu. We need that the Nismach be at least in the presence of the Masmech. He doesn't have to lean his hands on the head of the Masmech like Yoshua on the Nismach, like Yeshua did like Moshe did with Yoshua, but at least he has to be Befano. And the Yad Ramah rejects the second shot because the Gemara formulates its suffix in the case of Chutz La'aretz. There's something here about Chutz La'aretz. You know, we just finished saying in the name of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi that we need Eretz Yisrael, right? Ein smicha b'chutz la'aretz. And now the question is, what if the masmichim are in Eretz Yisrael? Do we need that the nismachim will also be in Eretz Yisrael?
In the case where the nismachim, the one who's getting the smicha,
right, is a chutz, they call it nismachim, if you want to use that.
Yeah. He's a chutz la'aretz. Why does the
But what happens is that the Nismach gets a document, As I said before, maybe the document was sent by a bird. I don't know. They didn't have fax machines in those days. I remember when the fax machine first came out, I thought it was a miracle. You know, the whole concept of a fax machine. Again, today we take it for granted. So there was a different system of fax machines then. So they sent it with a bird, a carrier, or a shliach, and they notified so-and-so that he got smicha. I would assume he made a yontif on that day. He wore his special kapata, you know, for yontif. And once he got this document and the word spread like wildfire that he received smicha, you know, then everybody knew that he got smicha. Toshma, the Gemara says, let's see if we can prove this. The Rabbi Yochanan v'mitztair al leid Rav Shmon ben Abba. Rabbi Yochanan, who is in Eretz Yisrael, wanted to confer smicha on someone called Rav Shmon ben Abba. Now it seems that the reason why he couldn't do so was to be shum because lo havi gabayu delismeche. Now again, what does it mean lo havi gabayu delismeche? Meaning Rav Shmon was not there, present, in order to receive smicha. So again, we're going to have the machlokes between the two mefarshim in the Ad Ramah. According to one school of thought, it means he wasn't in front of Rav Yochanan, he couldn't make it in front of Rav Yochanan. And the other pshat is that he was in Chutz Laaretz, and therefore he couldn't get smicha. But for one reason or another, Rav Yochanan could not confer smicha on Rav Shaman Bar Abba. According to the maskana of the Ad Ramah, if you remember, the issue would only be Chutz Laaretz. The fact that he's not standing in the presence of Rav Yochanan, that would not be in itself a reason to invalidate smicha. But what makes smicha impossible is the fact that Rav Shaman Bar Abba is in Chutz Laaretz. That's how the Yad Ramah is going to learn this sugya. So that even though Rav Yochanan himself was in Eretz Yisrael, and he wanted to confer smicha on a Talmud of his that was in Chutz Laaretz, it was impossible for him to do so, because obviously we need that the Nismach be in Eretz Yisrael. So there's no such thing as long distance smicha if long distance means from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laaretz. Now I find it a little bit fascinating, and as we go through this Gemara, tell me if this works out, but it seems to me that you can call someone a Rav even though he doesn't have smicha. Because take a look, we're talking about Rav Shaman Bar Abba. He didn't get smicha from Rav Yochanan because he was in Chutz Laaretz, and yet he's called Rav. So the thesis I'd like to suggest is that there's a difference between Rabbi and Rav, because if you go back to the original Gemara, the Gemara says that you don't need an actual physical smicha, but rather you need to declare he is Rabbi. So you confer the title on him, but the title is Rabbi. Now, in Chutz Laaretz, we find many Amoraim who are called Rav. Rav so-and-so and Rav so-and-so. And it could be that they were considered Talmidei Chachamim, they were great scholars, but they would be only called Rav. In Eretz Yisrael, you would have Rabbi, or alternatively, if you had someone who received Smicha in Eretz Yisrael, and then he went to Chutz Laaretz, he would retain his status as Rabbi. But if he was never in Eretz Yisrael to receive smicha, he would be Rav, but not Rabbi. So I don't know. I'm just throwing that out as a thesis, and we'll see if I could, if we could sustain that. The Gemara brings now another story of Rabbi Yochanan. This is fascinating. Rabbi Yochanan wanted to give smicha to Rabbi Shimon ben Zirud v'chad de'imei. He wanted to confer smicha on two students, one of which we can identify by name, and the other one, Chad, the second one, Di'imei. Di'imei was together with him, but he's anonymous. We don't have his name. Umanu, but Gemara says we can identify him, and then we have to ask why his name was omitted, and his name is Rabbi Yonasan ben Achmoy. The Amrile, and others say, It was Rabbi Yonasan ben Achmai that Rabbi Yochanan wanted to confer smicha on, v'chad ime, and another anonymous rabbi, and who was he? That was Rabbi Shimon ben Zirut. So the Mepharshim say, what's the difference between the first Lishna and the second Lishna? I mean, they both have the same two names of Talmidim and Rabbi Yochanan, and that Rabbi Yochanan wanted to confer smicha to. But the answer is that, as we mentioned before, Mishum Kvodo Shalat Gadol, you don't mention the name of someone who's on a lower level together with someone who's on a higher level. So there are two opinions. Who is greater? Who had a greater status? Was it Rabbi Shimon or was it Rabbi Yonasan? Chad ha'avik ha'bayu samchuha, v'chad lo ha'avik ha'bayu lo samchuha. So the Gemara concludes that although Rabbi Yochanan had in mind to confer smicha on both of these rabbis, he was only successful with regard to one of them. I don't know which one it was. The Gemara doesn't tell us that. But my claim, I mean my thesis, is going to be the following. One of them became Rabbi, and the other remained Rav. So I don't know if it's Rabbi Yonasan and Rav Shimon, or the opposite, Rav Shimon and Rabbi Yonasan. I don't know. It's unclear to me. Then the Gemara tells us another story. Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Hoshaya, Havika, Mishtakid, Rabbi Yochanan, Lemismeche. Now the word Mishtakid indicates when you work for something very hard and you try time and time and time again. Like, for example, we have a word amasmid, but in Hebrew, amasmid in the original language is called shakdan. Shakdan means he's working very hard. So Rabbi Yochanan was working very hard to confer smicha on Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Hoshaya. V'lohavi mistaya milsa, and he never succeeded in implementing his agenda, his program. Now, why is that so? Rashi tells us that whenever Rabbi Yochanan wanted to confer smicha on these Talmidim, he didn't find two other people to join him as a tribunal. Now what does that mean, he couldn't find two other people? What does Rashi mean over here? So the Achronim claim that Rashi holds that in order to confer smicha, you need three somchim who are all musmachim. It's not just that you take another two to fill up the bench, you know, to round out the tribunal. No, you need that the other two have the status of musmachim. And Rabbi Yochanan was not successful in rounding up another two musmachim to set up a tribunal. And Lavi Mestaya Milsa, he never was able to confer smich on these great rabbis. Now the Rambam Shita is that in order to confer smicha, you only need one samuch, and the other two are simply chachamim. So what would have been so difficult for Rabbi Yochanan to find another two chachamim? Why is it lo mistaya milsa? So the Achronim say that there must have been some other barriers, you know, some other inhibitions that prevented from Rabbi Yochanan from conferring smicha.
Feel that any others didn't feel these gentlemen were worthy?
It's hard to believe, because Rabbi Yochanan was certainly the greatest of his generation. In fact, the Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan is a Tana, he has the status of a Tana. And in Eretz Yisrael, he was the kingpin in his time. He was the Rosh Hashiva. So I don't know if anyone would have been inhibited to confer smicha on Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Hoshaya. Now some want to say that according to the Rambam, all you need is two people minashuk. You don't need musmachim, the other two, and any rank and file Jew on the street could be hooked in. I don't know if you ever had this experience, like for example in the case of chalitza, for example. You see, chalitza is done publicly, so if you're floating around the streets and they need you, they'll hook you in, you know. Or if you did, they need
the guest.
Right.
The restaurant was in a mall, and they
just took me out of a restaurant to be an Eidim.
Yeah,
for
Eidim Kiddushin. Hopefully for Eidim Kiddushin. All right, whatever. But not, there are situations you need a minion, so they grab you. That's called other ministry. You don't just grab and pop, plop the yarmulke on his head. You know what I'm saying? And we'll consider him part of the minion. You know, in the army, we had to do this all the time. You know, we had, in my pluga, we had 9 religious soldiers and 1 conservative. So we always popped the yarmulke on his head and we were watching for a minion. In any event, so Rabbi Yochanan is hard pressed to find 2 people minashuk according to the Rambam. Like, what's going on over here? So this is pretty way out, but I'll just share it with you. There's a Gilyan, there's a comment on the side of the Gemara that quotes a source for what's called Nikiye Hadas. Now, Nikiye Hadas, if I had to describe it in English, would be people who were super duper in their religious piety, way beyond the letter of the law. They took upon themselves extra measures of piety. And the Gemara says later on in Sanhedrin about the Nikiy Hadas that lived in Yerushalayim, in the environments of Eretz Yisrael, in the Holy Holies. These Nikiy Hadas would not get together with people from the Shuk, because they didn't want to be, they didn't, you know, sometimes you get too close to someone, you rub shoulders, you know, certain things rub off on you. So, I mean, I'm just adding that, I don't know if that's true, but so they wouldn't sit and eat, for example, with other minashuk. They wouldn't sign a shtar together with other minashuk. They, you know, they didn't have too much interaction. These were the Nikiye, the holy rollers of Yerushalayim. So some want to suggest that Rabbi Yochanan fit into that category of Nikiye Hadas v'Yerushalayim. Again, Rabbi will say it's hard for us to relate to this because we live in a generation where if you exclude relationships with Adam and Ashuk, then the whole Kiruv movement goes down the tube. So we live in a post-Kiruv world where assimilation and intermarriage is so rampant that imagine if the handful of religious Jews wouldn't have any contact with Adam and Ashuk. But again, back in those days, it was a whole different story. I mean, if you're familiar with the concept of Ochlei Chulin Betara, does that mean anything to you? There were Jews in Eretz Yisrael who would not eat anything unless it was absolutely guaranteed 100% that it was tar. Now, normally, you can eat anything that's tamei or tar, it doesn't matter, unless it's kachim or truma tamei. That's a different story. But there were those who were machmir, and they wouldn't eat anything that had tuma in it. That was their super sensitive pious psyche. And these people would make sure that all their interaction were with people on a great status. So Rabbi Yochanan didn't want to confer smicha on his 2 Talmidim if he had to sit with 2 people which were quote-unquote Adam min Ashur, something from the Shur. But otherwise, leaving that out, the simple way is to say that there was some other impediments that made it impossible for Rabbi Yochanan to confer smicha on these 2 Talmidim. And that's called Lo Avi Mistaya Milsa. He never succeeded in doing so. Havi Komitztayer Tuva. He was very upset. Now, I'm not sure why he was so upset. I'm going to offer 2 possibilities. One is because he felt that if they wouldn't get smicha, they couldn't have that impact. And they were very important chains in the link of the transmission of Torah. The other way of understanding it is that maybe somebody else would confer smicha on them. But Rabbi Yochanan felt that these were his Talmidim. And in the context of that relationship that he had with his Talmidim, in that intimacy, he wanted to be the one that would give them smicha. Maybe ultimately they'll get smicha from some other rabbi, but he wanted to be the one to give smicha. So he's mitztayer tuva. Now, I would like to bring a raya here for my shita. Again, no one has to accept my shita because it's against the accepted shita in the world of Jewish hashkafa. In the world of Jewish hashkafa today, and I'm going to try to be as honest as I, because I don't buy into the shita, but this is the most popular shita. You know, I live in Arnof, so if you go up the mountain, on the top is a rechov called Rechov HaKavlan. You know, so that's where they have all these very holy Bali Tshuva yeshiva. So if you go to those yeshivas, then anything that happens to you in your life, you have to be happy about, because it's all part of a divine plan. So I would ask a kash on that shita, which is very accepted by 99% of Jewry today, because we live in a Bal Tshuva generation. So I would ask them, why is Rabbi Yochanan mitztayer? Why does if it's part of a divine plan, he should be makabel bi'ava, you know? So a person is dying of cancer, but he should be happy about it because it's part of a divine plan, right? Why should he be mitztayer? So I don't think that's the right hashkafa. You know, the right hashkafa is that I want to do my maximum in serving Hashem, and if I can't do my maximum, I'm in a state of tzar, because it means that for some reason God didn't give me the opportunity. So don't just say, well, it's part of a divine plan. You have to think about what perhaps is fluky here. Why did the system go awry? And that's a valid question. Again, ultimately, God is righteous, and you have to believe in the righteousness of God. You know, Hakel Tamim Paulo, Ein Avel. But you have to blame yourself. And when you blame yourself, you're in a state of tzar. My Rebbe used to always say that Avelus is a time of tzar because it's meant to project you to tshuva. If you lost a close relative, Rabbanu Litzlan, you have to know what's going on. You have to, you know, shape up. You know, we started today officially the month of Elul, which is the month of tshuva. So that's how we mitztayer tshuva. It's a tzar that's meant to project you to do tshuva. But it is a tzar. You know, it's a human psychological emotion, and it's not to be invalidated. Don't just dance in the streets because they're killing you, you know, and say, well, it's part of a divine plan. But at the end of the day, they were able to calm Rabbi Yochanan down. This was not in any way a way in which God prevented Rabbi Yochanan from fulfilling his great ambition to confer smicha. Amrule. So Rabbi Hanina and Rabbi Hoshaya tell Rabbi Yochanan to calm him down. Lo nitztayer mar. Mar is when you talk to someone in third person. Don't be in a state of tzar on the fact that you weren't able to give a smicha. We have news for you. Now I'm wondering if they never revealed this truth all the years that they were, you know. But anyway, at this point in time, they're revealing the truth. Da'anan, we are descendants of Beis Eli. Now this is a parsha at the beginning of Shmuel Aleph. It's not exactly clear what the sons of Eli HaKohen. Eli HaKohen was the Kohen Gadol at the time of Mishkan Shiloh, and very often his sons would take over and do the Avodah under his tutelage. And apparently, on certain occasions, they were a little bit too laid back about it, especially when Almana came, a woman who was widowed. They weren't so careful about bringing the korban immediately. You know, they said, you know, it may take a time. Now, what happens if a married woman brings a korban? And they said, you know, there are cheap inns over here. You know, you can get a cheap deal in a hotel, you know, locally in Shiloh, and come back tomorrow morning. We're ready to close shop. So as a result, the woman couldn't go back to her husband and resume her marital relations because she had to desperately bring this korban as part of the process of Tara. So God put a whammy on Beis Eli. And apparently Eli himself was to some extent implicitly guilty here by implication. And the whammy, as we'll soon see, on Beis Eli was that they wouldn't become zekanim. Now we have to understand what the pasuk means by zekanim. Does it mean old age, or it means a musmach, somebody who gets smicha? The Omer Rab Shmuel Bar Nachman Omer Rab Yonah, so minayin she'ein nismachim lebeis Eli, which doesn't mean that you cannot confer smicha on someone who descends from Eli, but it means you'll never succeed in doing so. because of the divine curse, the metaphysical curse, and Nemar, because the pasuk addresses Eliyahu Kohen, and it says, Lo yeh zaken b'beisecha kol hayomim. There will never be a zaken in your bias, meaning in your lineage, in your amongst your descendants. My zaken, what was the substance of this divine curse? Ile mazaken mamish, if it really means that they wouldn't reach old age. So Gemara says that is a valid pshat, but the problem is haksiv in the very next pasuk it says kol marbis beis chayamusu anoshim, which means that your children will die young. So there's a repetition here. There's a redundancy in the first pasuk, which in the second chapter of Shmuel Aleph is lamed beis pasuk lamed beis. There it says lo yeh zaken b'beisecha. In the very next pasuk, which is pasuk lamed gimel, it seems to be repeating the same story. Called marbis beis chayamusu anoshim. Anoshim means young men. Usually, the word anoshim refers to people who are 18 years old. That's when you become an ish, when you're 18. So therefore, by process of elimination, it's impossible that zaken means an older person, because the pasuk already puts that whammy in the next pasuk. Ella, but rather what it means is smicha, that the word zaken here means a musmach. Now, all the mafarshim from Rashi and all the way down address the question, why does the word zaken mean a musmach? After all, zaken literally means an older person. So the answer is, this is based on a Gemara in Kiddushin. The Gemara says, Ein zaken el misha kana chachma. That zaken means the wisdom of age, of maturity, of experience, of older age. And in this particular context, it means smicha, that a person acquires the wisdom of a zaken, he's ready for smicha. And now, Hashem says, addressing himself to Eliyahu Kohen, Lo yeh zaken b'beisecha. So Rabbi Yochanan, there's no reason for you to be mitztar, because this is really part of a divine plan. But not only is it part of a divine plan that you shouldn't give the smicha, but it's part of a divine plan that no one would confer smicha on us, because we simply are subject, included in that divine metaphysical pasuk that says, Lo yeh zaken b'beisecha, we are descendants of Beis Eli. Now, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah claims that there are people who descend from Beis Eli who do reach older age. So what do we do with this pasuk of Yamusu Anoshim? Anoshim, Rashi says, means 18-year-olds. So the Gemara says that there are Chachamim from Beis Eli that achieve zikna, meaning older age, al yideisha oskim b'torah u'b'gemilas chasodim. Now, I can't answer the following question. Why would Torah and its study play a role here to mitigate against this curse, the divine curse? But I can explain Gemilas Chasodim, I think. Because their Avera, the sons of Eli, while they were insensitive to the needs of other human beings. In this case, the women who want to go back quickly to their husbands. So Gemilas Chasodim is certainly what we call a tikkun to rectify their Avera. I'm not exactly sure about Torah. But there is a Gemara in Sota that says that even a Sota who's guilty as accused will sometimes live after she drinks the Meimarim for up to 3 years' time before her system explodes. And the Gemara asks, why? Why doesn't she die immediately? So Gemara says, because of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. The Talmud Torah has a special protection. So I created a seminary for women, and I always used to like to quote this Gemara, that women should be learning Torah. But the truth is that Gemara is not only is it not a proof of my thesis, but it's a disproof of my thesis. Because the Gemara asks, women are exempt from Torah. So how can you tell me that she has the schus of Torah? And that's the famous Gemara, that they dress up their little boys for cheder and send them out to learn, or they send out their husbands to go to the Beis Medrash and learn, so they get the schus of their husband's Torah. So if you say that to MMY, where that was the school that I created, you know, you don't. That would not be politically correct. In any event, But you see here that there's some sort of zchus haTorah that even someone who really should be Nebuch should be suffer the ultimate punishment. He's going to be able to live longer because of the power of Torah. So in any event, the Gemara establishes that there are descendants of Beis Eli who live to older ages, but because of either Torah, Gemilas Chasadim, or a combination thereof. Now here I want to share with you the Kasha of the Marsha. The Marsha says the following. Why do we call these two Chachamim? Who can tell me their names? But be very careful about it. What are the names of these two Chachamim that did not receive Smicha? Because they came from Beis Eli. Anybody, I don't hear a word here. So all of a sudden, and if I don't hear a word here, I hear all the noise from the outside. That's not good. What? Nobody? Nobody's following the Gemara inside? That gives me a little bit of Chalish Sadas here. Take a look. If you have a Gemara Sanhedrin, Daf Yudalev, what are the names of these two Chachamim? Oh, thank you. Rebbe Chanina and Rebbe Hoshea. Now, I presented to you a thesis before that in Bavel, where there was no smicha, you could only be a Rav. In Eretz Yisrael, where you got smicha, you could be upgraded to the status of a Musmok, which is called a Rabbi. So how could these two descendants of Beis Eli be considered Rabbi, be called Rabbi Hoshea, Rabbi Chanina, if they never received smicha? So guess what? Misery loves company, and the Marsha asks this question. He says, "Kevet shelo zachu lihisamech, madua nikru b'shem Rebbe Chanina v'Rebbe Hoshaya." Harin is barely el shirak liachar smicha nismach nikru Rebbe. Is tiret samarsha she talking levaris divrei gemara li el sheli achar smicha haya nismach nikru b'shem Rabbi stam. Akam kodem locheno yinikra Rabbi Ploni. So the first answer to the Marsha is the following: that you could get the appellation Rabbi even if you don't have smicha, as long as the word Rabbi is always attached to your name. But the word Rabbi as a title, independent of your name, without mentioning your name, that can only apply to a musma. Then we call him Rabbi. His second answer is that we have to change the gears of the Gemara. It can't be that this is correct, Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Hoshaya. It's got to be Rav Chanina and Rav Hoshaya, because in Bavel, they couldn't give smicha. Where they couldn't give smicha, the rabbis were called Rav and not Rabbi. Only in Eretz Yisrael, the Nismachim, since they had smicha, they would get the appellation Rabbi. And we'll see later on, if you take a look in Sanhedrin, Daf Samach Zayin Amud Beis, the same two Chachamim appear on the Gemara, Samach Zayin Amud Beis, as Rav Chanina and Rav Hoshaya. So you see that there's a mistake in the text of our Gemara. Somebody went ahead and added a Yud to Rabbi Chanina's name. Or if you take the first shot in the Marsha, it's because you add that name. Once you add that name, you can call Rabbi, even if they don't have smicha. So I think we'll have to stop here. We ran out of time. We're up to, if somebody could give me a pencil, I'll just borrow. Thank you so much. We're up to Rabbi Zera. And this next Gemara about Rabbi Zera is going to answer the following question. Do you want to get smicha or do you not want to get smicha? What do you think? Is it a good deal or not? You would say it's a good deal. Yet Rabbi Zera went into hiding because he was afraid that his Rebbe, I'm not sure who his Rebbe is, would confer smicha on him. So he went into hiding. He ran away. And the question is why? I mean, what's so terrible about getting smicha? You know, I know plenty of people who give their right arm to get smicha. So, and how much more so if you could be a musmok ishmi v'ish to Moshe Rabbeinu? So, Belina, that'll be our subject for tonight.
That story you're saying is very similar to one of the 10 martyrs that got beheading.
I don't remember. I remember 10 martyrs, but each died a different kind of cruel death. I don't remember beheading.
One was beheaded.
Somewhere. There must be something.
So Bitterman said,
There were 10 Nazis that were beheaded. Well, they were hung.
They were hung.
Yeah.
I don't know, I just, we look at the very bitterness because he went home, whoever it was, whoever that rabbi was, he went home and he did a reflection, and what did he do to receive such a harsh, one out of ten, one of them, yeah, I think it was Rabbi Shmuel, right, so he said, why did I get this, you know, I'm such a pious, he pushed off a widow came to see him that night.
Right.
Did.
Rav Soloveitchik has a whole piece on that. Beautiful piece. Yeah. He wasn't even sure that that was his guilt, but he thinks, because the Torah says in Mishpatim that the punishment for not being sensitive to an almana is beheaded. Yeah. Right, so he figured if I'm being beheaded, then it must be that I'm guilty. So the Medrash in Eicha has a whole description of this woman who came to the judgment.
At night, and she cried or something.
Right. Because she felt that if her husband would have been alive,
exactly,
he wouldn't have delayed.
That's the story about it. It was very good.
Did you hear from him on Tisha B'Av?
No. I just
because it's very appropriate for Tisha B'Av.
Yeah, no, I just read his weekly memoirs. I printed it. It's very good.
All right.
So yeah, more of that about 2 or 3 weeks ago.